It may be a function of my getting older, but I find myself more and more being aware that I come to this moment, I am the person I am, not through just my own personality or experiences, but also for those who have gone before me. I see elements of both my parents in myself, which perhaps showing some maturity, I have an easier time accepting. I find myself influenced and standing upon those mentors of my past, teachers, people who have been important to me, who have cared for me, loved me, nurtured me, taught me, instructed me, had patience with me. I come to this moment not on my own, not alone, not a discrete individual. And when I think about this parish, I think about the more than 150 years of our history and how through that history there have been notable individuals who have given so tirelessly, so faithfully for this parish in every way. I think of those people whose names are not recorded in the history, but who have made us who we are and brought us to this moment, who are, in a sense, our foundation. We are not just this generation in this time alone, but we come here with a story, and we come here due to the faithfulness of so many who have gone before us. The reality is, I think, that the present is, for each of us, for each community, built upon the foundation of the past. And that sense of foundation I see throughout our lessons this morning. In our first lesson from the prophet Isaiah, Isaiah is talking to the people at a time when they have been in captivity, taken out of their homeland by the Babylonians. But Isaiah sees a time when this is going to change. The new king is going to lead them back to their land. There's going to be restoration of the people of Israel. And so Isaiah is telling the people, you see, that steadfast love of God is trustworthy. God is faithful. God's salvation endures. You will go home again. So Isaiah, in this passage, says to the people, listen to me, you that pursue righteousness, you that seek the Lord, look to the rock from which you were hewn and to the quarry from which you were dug. Listen to me. Don't listen to other voices. Don't listen to fear or doubt. Listen to that faithfulness of God, to that righteousness. And above all, look to Abraham and Sarah, ancestors in the faith, the ones to whom that promise of God was made, and God keeps it. But not only does God keep it, but you are built on that foundation, Isaiah is saying to the people, that foundation of Abraham and Sarah. You were hewn from that same quarry. A commentary I was reading this week talked about the interesting thing about rock is when you quarry it, when you break pieces, smaller pieces off a large chunk of rock, the rock doesn't lose its qualities. It has the same physical properties and appearance as those larger pieces. And there's some of that at work in our lesson this morning. Abraham and Sarah are the foundation, and we are quarried from them. And that faithfulness, that righteousness, the covenant that God makes with them endures and belongs to the people. So don't lose hope. Your land will be restored. In our gospel this morning, we have what may be for some of us a very familiar story. That account of Jesus checking in with the disciples about who are people saying he is. He's been going around preaching and teaching and healing. And people know this person is not like others. There's something about him. But who is he? And the answer most people give is he's one of the great prophets come back to life. But then there's Peter. Peter, the one who answers the question for himself, because Jesus cares most, what do the disciples think? So he says, who do you say that I am? And Peter's right there with an answer. You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God. And Jesus sees in that answer that Peter knows that because of the grace of God. God has revealed that to Peter. That understanding can only come from God. It's yet again in our journey through Matthew that we hear about Peter having some understanding, bit by bit, of who Jesus is. 2 weeks ago, Peter was, you may remember, walking on the water. He was testing out, who is this person? And he sees that in Jesus' power over the water, Jesus is the Son of God. Only God can tame those waters. Only God can enable a human being to walk on water. And then today, in this gospel, Peter again affirms that Jesus is the Messiah, the one who has come to save and deliver the people. In fact, the Son of the living God. Now, Peter makes this confession, and Jesus responds by saying, Peter, you are the rock. You are the rock on which I will build my church. And Jesus says this to Peter, I think, not because Peter is perfect, for we know he is not. He says this not because Peter always understands, for we know he doesn't. In fact, next Sunday we'll hear just a few verses later how Peter really doesn't understand what it means that Jesus is the Messiah. Stay tuned, come back next week. Peter does not always understand what Jesus is saying. But in this moment, Peter glimpses through the grace of God who Jesus is, and Jesus is making him the rock in recognition of that confession, of that insight. And so it is that Peter becomes, and is already showing elements of being, a leader in the early church. He's the one always speaking for the disciples. He is the one who, with Paul, lay the foundations of the church, being the great apostles. The church came into being for their faithfulness. But again, he's not perfect. He denies Jesus. He's very human. But he has those qualities, and Jesus sees it in him and names him the rock. And in naming him the rock, he says that he gives Peter the keys to the kingdom. I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven, and whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. Whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. Keys to this kingdom which is stronger even the power of Hades and the power of death. A kingdom that will endure no matter what. A kingdom over which nothing has power. Now, I don't know about you, but when I hear that phrase, to bind and to loose, that authority given to Peter, I can't help but remember, particularly as I grew up Roman Catholic, the Roman Catholic interpretation of those words, and how the Roman Catholic Church teaches that that authority conferred on Peter is transferred to all his successors, the popes, and uses as a justification for papal authority. Interestingly, in Matthew, in chapter 18, two chapters after today's verse, that same authority to bind and to loose is given to the other disciples and to the church. And I think what's happening here is not authority given to Peter alone, but recognizing Peter as that rock, that foundation, the one who upon whom the church is built. But the authority to bind and loose belongs to the church. And that authority is not one of judgment and exclusivity. It is rather, I think, a message of love and inclusion. It is a continuation of Jesus' ministry once he has ascended, that the church is given. Jesus charges the church to be his presence in the world. And that ministry, to bind and to loose, is one of crossing the boundaries of our world. The one who goes to the places Jesus would go, to go across boundaries that divide us, to go to people that other folks would ignore, to be the one who goes to all people and not following those divisions that exist in our world. So it is that as followers of Jesus, we're invited to put on that same identity of Jesus. Who is Jesus, that Messiah, the Son of the living God? He is the one who brings that message of love to all people. And through baptism, we are incorporated into the very identity of Jesus. And so our call is then to be the people who go out and do that same work that Jesus gives us to do, to continue that mission of Jesus, empowered by the gift of the Holy Spirit for the ministries we've been given to do. And heaven knows there are many boundaries and divisions in our world. And I don't know about you, but in the last few weeks I've been so painfully aware, as I have paid attention to the news, all the places of boundary, of division, and particularly of violence across those lines. Very much in the news has been what's happening in Ferguson, Missouri. And some people see in that an expression of a community that is angry at how they have been treated. Others see anarchy. But there's a boundary there. There's something dividing people, and there is pain and there is hurt around that boundary. While we have done much work in this country, there is much more work to be done on this 50th anniversary of the Civil Rights Movement. The work is not finished. We still have things which divide us. This week, an Episcopal Vital Practices, which is a website and has a Facebook posting periodically, has postings which are written by people all around the church. There was a posting by Anna Olson, who's an Episcopal priest and a rector in Los Angeles. And she grew up 10 miles from Ferguson, where Michael Brown was shot. And she talks about her experience decades ago in that community of a divide. And she says that many of us live in communities which are very like ourselves, and we don't always cross those divisions. We stay in homogeneous groups. She actually dares to say there is still segregation in our country by race and by class. She wrote this: "Segregation is the only tool in racism's is not the only tool in racism's quiver, but it is one that strikes very close to home for the church, whether we live in communities with militarized police and housing projects, or in the relative safety and comfort of affluent suburbia. The public unraveling of my hometown reveals segregation for what it is: a sin. Sin separates us from God and one another, leaving us unable to see our shared humanity, the equal preciousness of each of our messy lives in God's sight." She goes on, "In the church, we mostly accept segregation. Because our neighborhoods are segregated, our churches follow. Because we have voluntary institutions, the people our churches attract most often mirror the existing congregation in race and class. We celebrate multiculturalism as cool, but make a thousand excuses for giving up on the hard work of making real space for everyone. Our world and our God need us to be able to see one another's children as our own. We live in a still segregated country despite much love and blood poured out to make it otherwise. Can we rise to the challenge of opening the cracks in that sinful reality, wherever it is that we find ourselves?" Hard words, I think. And not always pleasant to hear someone talk about segregation. But I think her point about boundaries and divisions is real. I frankly think of our own neighborhood. Our own neighborhood, which has a boundary, and it's Camp Street. I remember 20 years ago when I first came to Providence, I was warned as a white person not to go two places in our city, South Providence and Camp Street. And in fact, I ended up living very near South Providence. And I'm very interested in seeing, as a parish, what we can continue to do. We have a relationship with Camp Street Ministries. We give them food weekly. We've been invited to work with them in their ministry as they reach out to people in the neighborhood. I look forward to that chance to do more, to build relationships, to get to know people, to dare to cross that boundary and see the full humanity of people on each side of it. Our newly visioned music program, which will be launched next year, has as a goal to invite young people from the Camp Street part of our neighborhood to come and be part of our program here, trying to build relationships across boundaries. This week there's an article in the New York Times, and it talked about a shooting of yet another unarmed young man of color. And it talked about the fact that some of the very same feelings that happened in Ferguson came up in that event. But the difference was, LA has had a long journey in dealing with these issues, and they've built relationships between community groups and the police, with churches, with civic leaders. People know and can talk to each other, and while the issues are there, they're able to engage in dialogue, and they're able to do that more productively and peacefully. So I think we have an opportunity as Christians, as followers of Jesus, to put on that identity of Jesus and dare to cross those boundaries. Dare to go to see the full humanity, the beloved personhood of each person, and to get to know them, and to reach out to them, and to build relationships of trust and of meaning with them. So those of us who are baptized into the death and resurrection of Jesus, let us rest on that foundation, that cornerstone which is Jesus, supported by the foundation of Peter and Paul and all those Christians who have gone before us, who support us as we go forward in our generation. And may we not rest until we build those relationships across those boundaries of division and mistrust. that all may come to know that wide, embracing, inclusive love of God. Amen.